Hi, and welcome to the Alpha Wetlands podcast.
Hello, my name is Irina, and I'm from Alpha Wetlands communication team, and you're listening to Alpha Wetlands podcast. Today, our guest is Volker Mauerhofer, and we have met recently at our Living Lab Open Day in Austria and discussed about birds protection in Europe. Mr. Mauerhofer is an Austrian academic and research specializing in environmental science, environmental law, and sustainability. Currently, he's affiliated inter alia with Ghent University, Belgium, and Meiji University, Tokyo, Japan. He is also a member, for example, of the board of the Society of Conservation Biology, European section. His academic background and multidisciplinary, including master in law, natural sciences, and ecological economics. Also, he holds a doctorate in law. So thank you, Mr. Mauerhofer, for being with us today. My first question would be, what are the main challenges currently affecting bird populations under existing conservation directives?
So the main challenges, I think, are really a lack of effective implementation and enforcement. Implementation of, for example, the Bird Directive. The Bird Directive was considered in 2016 fit for purpose. It was also considered ready for action, but the action didn't really follow that much as it would have been necessary. And that's a big problem, that we have still many or sites, for example, designated under the Birds Directive, which are in many areas still paper parks. There's too less stuff, too less financial means to implement the management measures. We have not proper defined management plans, if there is a management plan, so at all. We have many cases where management plans are also missing, and I know at least in Austria we have currently an infringement procedure ongoing by the European Commission, where Austria is addressed in this regard, lack of management of certain sites. So it's not the law, but it's the implementation of the law and the enforcement, which is a big, big problem in the goal to bring birds also on a favorable conservation status, bird populations. While we have with certain birds, because the direct chasing of birds, direct killing of birds has been prohibited, we have some positive trends with some larger birds of prey, for example. But in overall, we have for protected sites a lack of implementation and enforcement. And outside of protected sites, we have the usual suspects, particularly agriculture, but also forestry, which affect bird numbers and bird populations. And I think bird life, the falling, mostly decreasing farmland bird index is an indication for that.
Yeah, thank you for your thoughtful answer to this important question. And we understand that still a lot of to do. And thank you for highlighting what possible next steps need to be implemented. But there is already some progress and it sounds a bit promising. My next question would be, how effective have policy like bird protection directives been in preserving habitats and biodiversity so far? You already answered partly to this question, but maybe there is something to add.
There is a scientific paper out there, I'm not sure from which year, but at least 10 years back, where they showed that there was a significant positive effect of the Birds Directive in comparison to areas which are not protected by the Birds Directive. I think it was published in Science. A Polish colleague from Bird Life International, I think, was one of the main authors. So the Birds Directive has an effect, but we still lack a lot of implementation of the Birds Directive. Yeah, we have still some areas which are designated by BirdLife International as important bird areas. And the Court of Justice of the European Union has already spoken that those important bird areas are so-called factual bird sites, which do not allow economic activities before they're not designated. Then you can go into the procedure to get an exception from that prohibition. And we have still certain bird areas which are not designated, certain factual bird areas which are not designated yet. And there many things happen to the disadvantage of birds. So we have some positive effect of the birds directive, but it could have much more positive effects if the implementation would work proper in those areas which are designated, and those areas which are wrongfully not designated need to be designated as soon as possible. And yeah, so there are different aspects in this question, I think. Thank you.
So designation and implementation are the key words. Thank you also for the answer. You have already mentioned agriculture and forestry, but for example, what conflicts can arise between wetlands restoration and birds conservation legislation, and how, in your opinion, they can be resolved?
We have, of course, under the European directives, different goals. We have the birds directive, the habitats directive. They protect a lot of different species. And we have species which perhaps like a higher level of water, species which don't need that high level of low water. So here we have, when it comes to restoration of wetlands, which have been, for example, for decades or even longer, not wetlands, we have perhaps management issues, which species to give prevalence, yeah? How high should we raise the water, yeah? And for the bird species, maybe the higher level of water would be preferable. For a plant, a less higher level of water would be preferable, but it could be also among different bird species, and both bird species might be protected, yeah? So we have here some interesting questions, but I think those questions can be solved by management plans and by zoning. Some areas get more water, some get less water, so that we fulfill for all the species the necessary requirements and bring them into a favorable conservation status. And if the area is not big enough for that, there would be the question arising if there would be not a duty to increase the size of the site. Yeah. I had recently a case in Sweden, and it's still an ongoing case, where there was an area protected under the Birds Directive and the Habitats Directive. And there, the water level was very low. So it was particularly protecting a certain plant species, because it was a plant species that was really depending on a sort of salty soil. And that salty soil was flooded then by one meter almost. And here, for example, the salty soil was also good for migrating birds, actually, and for that plant. But the raising of the water now by 1 meter covered that habitat type, and the areas for the migrating birds disappeared, actually, where they could go in that swamp, in that salty soil. And but now other birds came in the last 4 or 5 years. So more like ducks and also rare birds, which are now occupy that area. So meanwhile, the authority found that there was a mistake. A mistake has been done with that 1 meter extra water. And since 5 years, they discuss what to do now. And when the water level will be decreased by 1 meter, we will get back for sure the habitats for those migrating birds, which like the salty soil and rest there, particular waders. But we don't know if the plant will ever come back. That's another question, yeah, because it was 5 years flooded. But we for sure will not have, perhaps, we will not have that many ducks other species which like to dive in the higher level of water. Yeah, but there are many lakes around which those species can use also with deeper water. So that one lake was really the special one for a low water level, and that will be restored, need to be restored also under the Birds Directive and Habitats Directive.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mauerhofer, for this detailed practical example and also for providing tips how to resolve conflicts. And my next question will be, in what ways can research projects improve our understanding of threats such as climate change, habitat loss and population of bird species?
It's a very broad question. I have some projects initiated recently where we discuss parts of those issues. I give you one example. We have now started a project called Alamot under the Nordforsk funding scheme. It's a project between Sweden, Norway and Finland and 2.4 million euro for 5 years. And what we particularly look at is the effect of climate change on certain bird species also, and how this affects the migration towards north of those species, and not only bird species, we have other species also in the project, and then how the local community can contribute to improve the habitats of those bird species, particularly the indigenous people, the Sami, and how the relationship is between the Sami people and those species, and also noise pollution, for example, by tourism. So we look also on over-tourism. We look on over-tourism, we look on climate change, how they change habitats, how they change the use of habitats by birds. And so it's really an integrated project and a so-called nexus project that you look at certain effects, which are significant effects together, not separately in silos. But you put them into one research project, and then you have in this research project really interesting mixture, interdisciplinarity, of researchers. You have climate researchers, you have tourism researchers, you have plant ecologists, and then you look really at several effects, significant effects, like this over-tourism, like climate change, and try to find solutions then among those different effects. And that's perhaps more more promising than for the research output. Then you look into this research in terms of silos, that every climate looks just on climate, tourism looks on tourism, and you don't have really this cause effect loops in the research if you do it in silos, in research silos.
Thank you for providing this practical example. We are looking forward to hear more about further results of the project. And also now you raised a really important question of engagement different stakeholders into search of the common solutions and improvement of the situation and maybe combating climate change as well. And my last question for today's interview would be also tailored to this previous one. How can collaboration between scientists, policymakers, and local communities enhance the impact of research projects, for example, on birds conservation?
It's similar. I spoke before only that different groups of scientists should collaborate, but I mentioned also the local Sami communities in the northern countries. And I had another project in the Alps recently, which is called Alp Mema. And there we had also this kind of workshops and interactions with the local people on the one side, but also with politicians. So local politicians stayed the whole day in our workshop because they considered the research question relevant for them. And that's always when you plan research, you have to also think you need the local people, but what can you give back to the local people? And also how can you involve local decision makers like those politicians? And at the end, we stayed even longer than planned because the people came to us and told us their local communication channels. Oh, we can put something in the local newspaper. This is a local paper which we, as a local community, issue. Can we have something written in there about so that we inform the local people more about this? So not we were the ones who initiated this, but the local people who participated and the local politicians came to us and said, we want to have this in our local communication channels. And in this way, you spread also the project while you get also the information from the local people. And you can also even start, if the project is really designed like this, you start to formulate the question, the research question together with the local people. In the Alamot project, for example, we will have workshops where we speak with the people also, which species additionally do you think are important for this whole research question, tourism, Sami, and climate change, yeah? Which species should we concentrate on? So this is then giving the local also the opportunity to shape the research project according to what they think it's important. And those people are living in the region constantly. Researchers come in there and go out there, but they have really the long-term knowledge also about the circumstances. And I myself, I was just today with a local farmer and he showed me a nest from of a bird. And I'm living 40 years in that region. And I have never seen a nest of that bird yet here in that village, yeah? And he's living there, he's doing his firewood there, and beside doing his firewood, he found the bird nest, he saw the bird nest. So just as an example, to speak with local people, speak with local farmers, local communities, and you get information you would not find yourself because they have the knowledge much more, they are much more in the region. You can tell them what bird it is, yeah? But they find a nest, yeah, for example. So it's a synergy, I think, and it's about mutual understanding and collaboration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mauerhofer. This is really a nice summary of today's interview. And thank you also for providing, beside legislation frameworks, also these practical examples from your work. We are wishing you all the best in your for the implementation of such project, and also thank you for sharing your knowledge. We hope to stay connected further on. Thank you and bye-bye.
Thank you for inviting me and all the best for the project, Alpha Wetlands, and yeah, hope to stay in contact too. Bye.
That was the Alpha Wetlands podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Bye.